here. I started out in complex dynamics now, I guess maybe 10 years ago, a little bit kind of on the side. And I feel like whenever I'm coming to a talk, my knowledge doubles. But I also realize that the things I don't know, that group is also doubling. It's much bigger than the first, so I don't think I'll ever really catch up. So my goal today will be a little bit maybe to try to encourage you to think a little bit more about topological properties of Julia sets that hopefully you can maybe answer some questions that I cannot. So I'll try to kind of starting out maybe I'd like to list two main problems that I'm interested in. So here's the first one. We're always assuming that we're looking at a polynomial Julia set that's connected, and we want to know, the first question is it always true, is such a Julia set J always decomposable? So for those of you who are not so familiar with notions from continuous theory, I'll try to keep a little bit of a running list of definitions as to what those things are. So a continuum X is decomposable if there exists two proper subcontinua, A and B, of X, whose union is X. So X can be split into two pieces. And one could even ask, is it true that X is hereditarily decomposable, which would mean that every proper subcontinuum is decomposable as well. I'm sorry? Just subcontinua. So X is a continuum, and the continuum is decomposable. It can be split into two continua whose union is the whole. Compact connected metric, if you like, in this case. As far as I know, both of those questions are open, and I will not be able to really give any new insights on this question. But it relates to a question I'm currently interested in. Maybe it would be good, though, before we start out, to kind of maybe encourage you to think about this question, to make a very simple picture of a continuum that's not decomposable. So an indecomposable one, so you have a little bit of idea what you're actually looking for, what you're trying to find that doesn't exist, maybe. So the very simple picture would be the following. If we start, say, with the unit square, and we choose a channel, say, from this side into the unit square, let's call it C1, and this channel C1, say, is 1 dense in the unit square. And then we remove this channel, so we get a new continuum X2, which is X1 with this channel removed. And then in the next step, we extend this channel. So we kind of take a new channel, C2, which starts at the tip of C1, and then comes all the way around like this. So that's C2. And then, so C2 would be 1/2 dense. And then if we take X3 to be X2 minus C2, and then if we continue this process, we get a nested sequence of continua, so that's automatically continuum. And it's not difficult to see that this continuum is indecomposable, meaning it's not decomposable. So in order to see that, maybe the simplest way to realize that would be, if it were decomposable, we could write it as the union of two proper subcontinua. And if you think about this continua like this, then we could find ourselves a point in the one continuum that's not in the other, in both places. And you find a little ball around this that misses the other continuum. And now if we look at this channel that gets denser and denser and denser, that channel will enter the ball at some point of, say, around this little A. And now since it has to get dense, it will have to go into the ball around little B. And then back to A, because it has to get denser and denser and denser. And now if we take in this channel a center line, then that center line will be disjoint from B, because it would be outside the whole continuum. So you could take this center line here, running kind of like through the middle of this channel. And we could shortcut that center line inside this little ball around A. And that way we could obtain a simple closed curve that's disjoint from B. But it's easy to see in this case, if we look at the two sides of the channel, these will be points in B that are inside that simple closed curve. And here will be points of B that are outside that simple closed curve. So B cannot be connected, in other words. So this simple closed curve is disjoint from B, and we would have a disconnection of B. So this continuum has the following nice property that you should keep in mind. This continuum will be a non-separating plane continuum. So if we consider a Riemann map phi from the disk center at infinity, so the complement of the closed unit disk, to the complement of this continuum, then we can consider the same as we often do in complex dynamics. If you look at the image of a radial ray under this picture, so here is X, say at angle X, then that corresponds to an external ray Rx of this continuum. And there is an external ray, so in this case there exists an X, such that if you look at the closure of that ray, you get all of the continuum. So, and this is what's often called the principal continuum of the prime end X. So the principal continuum is the closure of an external ray. And in this case, that ray would be running right down, if you like, the center quote of that channel, winding down densely onto X. So that would have to be true in case there were an indecomposable dual set, and in fact much more must be true. This picture is much too simple. In fact, this property should be true for a set Y, a dense G delta on the circle. So in that sense, almost all rays have the property, so that are fjords, in other words, going in everywhere from the sides of this. So this thing is completely... No, that's not what I'm saying. But if there is one that is the Julia set of a polynomial, then there would be, that would be the situation, in fact, for a density delta of angles, that would be true. Okay. All right, so this is what you may think of as a global property of the Julia set. I'm more interested right now in local properties of the Julia set. So here's question two. That is local. So the question here could be, is it true for every Julia set, again, connected Julia set, that there exists a point Z in the Julia set such that the Julia set is locally connected at this point Z? So it's well known that there are Julia sets that are not locally connected at all points. I guess Duhadie and Sullivan have this done for a case your Julia set contains a Kramer point. But as far as I know, it's not known whether it's true that there is any Julia set that is nowhere locally connected. So the question here is there at least some points where you're locally connected? So in order to, again, to not everybody agrees exactly what locally connected is, so maybe we better put on the definition. If locally connected at Z, that means that for every neighborhood U of Z, there exists an open and connected set such that Z is in V is a subset of U. So. And for technical reasons, it turns out to consider a slightly different notion. So that's one that I will call, so this problem P2 prime, if you like. Does there exist a Z in J such that J is what I call connected inclinant at Z? And that's a slightly weaker notion. So X is a connected inclinant,
at Z, if for every neighborhood U of Z there exists a connected set, not necessarily open, such that Z is in the interior of this connected set, which remains in U. So clearly, if you're locally connected, of course, then you're connected in Kleinen. And these notions are very close. If your space is connected in Kleinen at all points, then it in fact is locally connected. But if you don't have it at all points, those notions are not exactly the same. So I get you some feeling maybe about the difference between those two notions. Look at the following simple example, what's sometimes called the witch's broom. So if you look at this space here, then it's not difficult to see that this space is connected in Kleinen at the point zero, the left end point here, but it's not locally connected at that point. So these notions are slightly different in case your space is not locally connected. All right, so I want to try to focus on this problem, although we'll kind of do need to have some information about that this doesn't happen in order to be able to answer that question in a particular situation. So maybe a little bit of motivation why you would want to know. So maybe if you start with the nicest possible case, so if you look at the case that the Julia set J really is locally connected, then it's well known that if you take the again the Riemann map from the disk at infinity to the complement of the filled-in Julia set, that that map extends over the unit circle. So we can extend that map over the closure of those spaces, and in this case, we can define a lamination, which for me isn't right now an equivalence relation on the unit circle, which will be invariant under the map sigma. Which is, say, D times Z mod 1, if the degree of the polynomial P you look at is D. And in that case, we have this nice situation. This is a closed equivalence relation. So if we now just restrict this picture to the unit circle, we have the situation that here we have the map from the unit circle. Here we have the quotient map given by this equivalence relation. So here we have S1 mod this equivalence relation, which what's sometimes called gives rise to the topological Julia set. So here we have the quotient map. And then in this particular case, of course, maybe I'll define this lamination here. So in this case, two points on the circle are equivalent if and only if the external rays Rx and Ry land at the same point, which in the locally connected case, of course, is exactly the same thing as saying that phi of x equals v of y. So in this case, this projection is in fact just the map phi. So in this case, this topological Julia set is just homeomorphic with the true Julia set. And here we have the polynomial p, and here we have the induced map from this map sigma. Since this equivalence relation is invariant, you induce a map on this topological Julia set, which is just really exactly gives you the full dynamics of the polynomial acting on this Julia set. So one could ask, so here's problem 3, how much of this survives if we give up local connectivity of the Julia set? So the question here is it true that does there exist a lamination in general on the unit circle
such that the induced map from the topological Julia set, which is just like there would be the quotient of the circle by this lamination, simplifies the dynamics. Of the given polynomial P on a Julia set. So some results are known here, and the big result is due to Jan Kiwi, who gave a rather complete answer to this question in a particular case. Since I'm writing down a name, I want to make sure that I mentioned it is joint work with Sascha Bloch, also from UAB. I'm sorry I didn't mention that earlier. All right, so Kiwi looked at the case where if P has no irrational neutral cycles. So in other words, there are no Kramer points and no Siegel points. Then he gave a complete answer to this question. So then the answer is yes to problem 3. And in fact, he constructed this nice picture where so there exists a lamination. And if we look at the induced map, so here we have the map sigma, which this is multiplied angles by d mod 1 on the unit circle. And if you look at its quotient given by this lamination, we get an induced map of the topological Julia set. And if we look at the original map polynomial acting on the Julia set, then in fact there exists a function here, M, which moreover is monotone. So that means point inverses are connected and all these diagrams commute. So in fact, this topological, the map on the topological Julia set is semi-conjugate to the action of the polynomial. So we can really think of this as a simpler model of the exact dynamics that takes place on the Julia set. M is continuous, so it's a really continuous map. So it's really a very nice situation because that tells you that this really tells you a lot about the dynamics that's actually taking place on the Julia set itself. Moreover, he proved the following two results. Also, this Julia set J is locally connected at any periodic point. And in fact, if you looked at this map, it's one-to-one at those points. So the way to say that is, so and if you take if Z is a periodic point, then if we go forward with Z and then come back, we just get only Z. In that sense, the map is one-to-one at all of the periodic points. So there's those places where the space is nice and where the dynamics is really, in some sense, really correctly reflected already. So I'm interested in kind of generalizing this situation to the case where one considers neutral irrational points. So in order to do that, let's first maybe recall Kiwi's definition of this lamination. So we need to define a lamination. We want to say what it means for 2 points. We take 2 points in the circle. What does it mean for them to be equivalent? So the first thing you could think of, if you remember the situation in the locally connected case, we had if two external rays land at the same point, then they had to be equivalent. So the natural thing to consider would be to look at the principal continuum. So you could say, well, first, look at the closure of the ray, which may no longer be a point. But if that intersects the closure of the other ray, then maybe that would be a good definition. But unfortunately, that doesn't work right. So this is not the right definition. So this is not good. Right? Because for two reasons, if you like. So one would be if you take the union of all these principal continua over the circle, you may not get all of the Julia set. So that could be a subset. And more importantly, like Doherty pointed out, the collection of principal continua is not upper semi-continuous. So we don't get a nice relation. So we need to look at what John calls the superclosure of the ray, something slightly bigger than the principal continuum. And again here, phi will always be the Riemann map from the disk of infinity to the complement of the filled-in Julia set. And in that situation, we can define, given a point x in the unit circle. Now, this map now no longer extends over the unit disk, over the circle. So, but we can still define something here, what's called the impression of this prime end x. And it would be exactly all the set points z in the complex plane such that there exists a sequence of points xi in the disk at infinity, which converges to this point x on the boundary of that disk, such that vxi, its image, converges to the point z. So clearly that's a bigger set than just taking the closure of the radial ray pushed forward. So this is a bigger subcontinuum, but always contains the principal continuum. And Kiwi showed his equivalence relation, in fact, is exactly defined through his impressions. He said, well, two points should be equivalent if and only if there exists a finite sequence of angles such that the impression of the i-th one meets the impression of the i-th plus first one. So that's the proper generalization for what we had in the locally connected case. And that gives you all these results. Yes. So he proves that as well. Yeah. So this is a closed equivalence relation. Okay. So if we want to work with impressions and do anything meaningful, those impressions better not be too big. So now coming back to this first problem here, it's a theorem by Childers, Mayer, and Rogers, that this Julia set J is a indecomposable, and we write two ways, is decomposable. More important for me, if and only if for every prime end, so every point on the unit circle, the impression has empty interior. So in that case, if your continuum is decomposable, all your impressions are truly small pieces of the Julia set, and you have some hope of somehow defining a lamination through impressions. To state the same thing, maybe the other way around. So just would just mean that there exists one, if you like, such that the interior of the impression is not empty. And like I remarked earlier, that means that there exists a density delta, such that for every y in y, in fact, the principal set of y is all of j. So that's for us, if you like, the bad case. Okay. This is about Julia sets. So no, this is a statement about Julia sets. So yeah, so here as well. Yeah, in the Julia set. So if you're looking, you have a subcontinuum of the Julia set, and you ask yourself whether that interior in the Julia set. And in this case, it cannot. So if it's decomposable, then all these things are in there very thinly, having no open set inside. So all right. So now. No, this is not so the way it goes is this here is the first thing you observe is that if you have an impression with non-empty interior, you push it forward and you have an impression as the whole Julia set. Once you have an impression as the whole Julia set, you pull it back, you get a dense set of impressions that are the whole Julia set. And then since it's upper sediment continuous, all impressions are the whole Julia set. And once you know all impressions are the whole Julia set, it's not difficult to construct this density delta so that the principal continuum are the whole Julia set. So that's basically the brief outline of the argument. No. So there is no statement here about rays. We know the full measure set of ray lengths. Yes. No, there could still be rays that don't land. So you may well have a picture. I don't know one, but. Certainly not all rays land. You could have a picture like this, where there is a ray coming in like this. Yeah, impression always continua. Yeah, this is a continuum containing the principal continuum. All right. So I always have the philosophy to go to the simplest possible situation. So now I want to go to a very special one. So this was all very general. So now we're going to look at the case where just the polynomial has degree 2 and we have a fixed Kramer point. Which we call little p. Okay. So now we're outside TV situation. And now we want to understand what happens in that situation. So the first thing is well known that those Julia sets are not locally connected at all points. We use a slightly different notion. So the first theorem kind of just is the same proof, if you like, as known results. And that says that J is not connected in Kleinen, which is slightly different motion, at this point P. And that just uses the existence of small cycles near the Kramer point, and it's basically the same proof. So this is true due to Sasha and me, and so is the second theorem. So the following are equivalent. Well, we need a little more than saying that these impressions have empty interior. So what we need is there exists an angle x in the circle such that this Kramer point P does not belong to the impression of that prime end. So this impression kind of is not just only empty interior, it stays away from the Kramer point. If that's true, then that's equivalent to saying there exists a point Z in the Julia set such that J is connected in Kleinen at that point. And then you can kind of do a little better kind of similar arguments to there. That is equivalent to saying that there exists a Y which contains a dense G delta in the circle such that for every Y in this set, we have the following three properties. The impression of this Y is degenerate, so it's just a single point C of Y. It's a point. Which is a nice situation. Second, the Julia set J is connected in Kleinen at that point. And thirdly, those points really sit at the outside of the space, so these points are contained in no other impression. It's not contained in any other impression. Impression. All right. So I'd like to maybe illustrate or tell you a little bit why that theorem is true. I do not know for sure. So I do know this, of course, does apply in the case you have a periodic point and its impression doesn't reach the Kramer point, but I don't know which ones do that or are there any that do that in general, right? Because obviously when the Julia set would be indecomposable, then none of this could hold, because all impressions would be the whole Julia set. Here's the main tool that you use to prove this theorem.
Are there examples where these properties hold and other examples where they don't?
I do not know, and I don't think it is known. So, but a lot of you here know a lot about Kramer-Julia sets, so probably someone in this room here knows. So I'm just trying to give you some conditions that you could put down and try to verify for yourself. Because I'm not capable of doing it. There is a nice tool, this is a fixed point tool, that comes into play in this in improving this theorem. So the situation is the following. We are in this case where we have a fixed Kramer point and the degree is 2. Let's suppose you have a continuum Z contained in the Julia set. And suppose it's invariant under the power of the map. So if you take the map F, which is the power of the polynomial, it maps this continuum Z to itself. So you should think of it as an impression. It was a periodic impression. Take a power on the map and the impression is fixed now. And what we know in this case is that, this thing maps onto. And we know we're given that the Kramer point P is not in Z. So that's what we know. Then, this continuum Z is in fact degenerate. So what you could vaguely say here, not exactly correct, is that you cannot have a continuum, in this case a tree-like continuum, because it's a subset of the Julia set, which is a tree-like continuum, in which all the fixed points of that continuum repel in a particular way. So in this case, we excluded the neutral point, and we're in the Julia set, so the only possible points left would be repelling periodic points. In this case, they have become fixed. And you cannot really repel. You may think of the picture of the arc, where you have an orientation-preserving homeomorphism of the arc, if you like, and then you cannot repel all the time, so you have to have something attractive. And this is exactly the same statement. Here it's stated rather narrowly, since this P is not in this continuum, the map F, in fact, is 1-to-1 on a neighborhood of Z, because this point P is in the omega limit set of the critical point, so we can't have that in there. In the proof, I'll exploit this condition. But the theorem actually is true in more generality than the way it's stated here, but it's a little bit more technical, and the proof is quite different in general. In the paper, we also proved only this case. So let's see how that proof goes. So we assume that Z is non-degenerate, and we need to get a contradiction. So then, just like before, we can find ourselves a Riemann map phi, and this will be really confusing, maybe I'll call it psi this time, from the, again, the unit disk center at infinity, to the complement of Z. And this map, of course, is not the map to the complement to the, of the entire Felton-Julia set. So this is a different map, and we have to be a little careful when we talk about external rays, when we talk about external rays here or external rays there, and they're obviously not the same. One more notion. We need to look at these impressions a little differently. So this is completely standard. So given a continuum Z, we have this map C. First thing we're going to find is called a crosscut. Crosscut of Z. That's just an open arc in the complement of Z, whose closure is a closed arc hitting Z in exactly two points. So that's a crosscut of Z. And that crosscut of Z has a shadow. And that will be the closure of the boundless complementary domain. So in this case, this is C. This will be the shadow of C. And a fundamental chain of crosscuts would just be a sequence of crosscuts that are nested. So this is a sequence of crosscuts, which have the important property that their diameter converges to zero. So this is the diameter of them. Goes to zero. And they're nested so that the shadow of the n plus first crosscut is contained in the shadow of the nth crosscut. So it would be a sequence that kind of sits in here like this. C1, C2 converging like this. And if we pull back these crosscuts under psi, we get a fundamental chain of crosscuts here that converges to a point on the circle. Yes. I want them to be disjoint. So they're actually disjoint like they're in the picture.
I'm a little confused on the record. I don't know what the hypothesis is.
Okay, so the hypothesis is that we have a continuum in the Julia set that is mapped to itself under the power of the map, so that's F. And the point P, the Kramer point, is not in that continuum. So this continuum doesn't contain a neutral fixed point. And then the conclusion is that that continuum has to be a point. So in fact, that's all it is. So that's the conclusion. So in other words, you cannot have an invariant in a vague way, not correctly stated, but heuristically stated. You cannot have a Euler continuum in which you have a homeomorphism in which every fixed point repels, but repels in a very particular way that I didn't mention here exactly. So first of all, it repels not just in the continuum, but in the plane. So that's a little bit more. But moreover, if you want to state it more carefully, you don't rotate at those fixed points. So that's what you mean. So you want there must always be a rotating fixed point, in other words, in your continuum, rotating at that point. And if you don't have that, then your whole continuum is just a single point. So that's the statement that's up. No. So this, because the Kramer point is not in there, the Kramer point is in the omega limit set of the critical points. So if you look at the critical point, it has to converge to P. So if the critical point were in this continuum, then P would be in the continuum. Because the omega limit set is continuum is invariant. So you push forward. So you can say this theorem completely topological, and then this would be an assumption, because you wouldn't have this other machinery available to you. Okay. So in this picture over here, to every prime and x, so a point x on the unit circle, x corresponds to a fundamental chain of crosscuts. I should say an equivalence class of a fundamental chains of crosscuts. And obviously, two fundamental chains are equivalent if they're interlaced with respect to each other. So, all right, so that gives us the notion of crosscuts, fundamental chains, and it's not difficult to see that if we have one of these fundamental chains of crosscuts, that the impression of this prime end will be just the intersection of the shadows of a defining sequence of fundamental chains for that prime end. And then that maybe would be a way to see that's a continuum. These are obviously all continua, and you get a nested continuum, and then your impression is a continuum. All right, so we'll have a lemma and then the main argument. So here's the lemma. So we have this map C from the unit disk, the Riemann map, to the complement of this continuum. We're looking at external rays under this C map of the continuum Z. So these are not external rays of the Julia set. And we are taking a fundamental chain that defines that prime end, and we're taking a point Z, which is equal to the limit of a sequence of crosscuts, where Cn is a fundamental chain of crosscuts. So this fundamental chain corresponds to point X on the unit circle. So in other words, this point Z then is in the principle set in the closure of the ray Rx. That's equivalent to being a limit of a sequence of crosscuts of a fundamental chain. These chains get small. And now we take a simple closed curve, Q. So let me make a picture. Here's Z. There's our ray Rx, and there would be a fundamental ray sequence of crosscuts kind of converging to Z, kind of like this. There's our picture. And we have a simple closed curve, Q. Q is a simple closed curve. So we have here that Z is in the topological hull of Q, so on the inside of that simple closed curve. And that simple closed curve intersects Z in at least two points. So every complementary component of Q is a crosscut of this continuum Z. And now we want to claim then there exists a component C of Q minus Z, so a piece of that simple closed curve, which is a crosscut which can be used as a element of a fundamental chain. So this crosscut crosses this ray, essentially. Well, so I have a limit of a fundamental chain of crosscuts. Every fundamental chain of crosscuts corresponds to a point of the circle, right? And that fundamental chain, in fact, if you look at it, here would be your the radial ray R prime X. Here would be its image, and this fundamental chain of crosscuts crosses that ray, right? So if I take a sequence of points here, the crosscuts all hit the ray, then the limit of that sequence is in the closure of the ray because the diameter of the crosscuts go to zero. So just from the fact, so in fact, it's true that the principal continuum is exactly the limit of all possible defining sequences for your prime end. So if you take all the limit points of defining sequence of cross ends, then you get exactly the principal continuum. So that's true in general, but I kind of did it here backwards. It's a little bit easier. I say if you had a point that's a limit, then it had to be in the limit of the ray. So that's easier to see. The other one would actually take some work, but I don't need the other direction. So if we have this lemma, and I want to prove the lemma, it's a little bit technical, it's not difficult, a little messy, we can have the following corollary, and that's what will be what's important for us. If we now know, moreover, that Z is a repelling fixed point, Then, of course, we can take simple closed curves that kind of map off of themselves because we're repelling at that point. So in particular, this crosscut C, its image will move off because the whole simple closed curve will move off if we take a smart one. So now we have that F of C intersected with C is empty. And we can do this for tinier and tinier and tinier simple closed curves. So that would mean, in fact, that there exists a fundamental chain of crosscuts, C sub n, such that the map moves these crosscuts off themselves. And this is a fundamental chain for the prime and x. Because they're all crossing x. So I just take a null sequence of simple closed curves that move off themselves. Is this empty set? I'm sorry. Thank you. That's what I need. Because I will prove in a minute that it cannot be empty, and then we would have a contradiction. Okay. So now we're ready to actually prove the theorem.
So you want to make these Q smaller and smaller?
Yes.
Well,
I mean, just take a null sequence of simple closed curves, and I'm repelling. So if you conjugate this to the true unit disk, take little small circles there and nest down on points. So I get them here to get smaller and smaller and smaller. So,
but it could be that the critical
point. No, this is a fixed point, so it's not a critical point.
No, but it could be that the critical point of the critical value
already cubed. Well, then take one smaller where it's not. So I just have a repelling fixed point for this map. So if you like a repelling periodic point, and at that repelling periodic point, all I need is a null sequence of disks that nest down on that point. And since I repel, the images of those disks, the simple closed curves, move off themselves. They actually move out. That's all I need. And whenever I have that, then pieces of those simple closed curves will give me my sequence of crosscuts, and they will move up off as well. That's cool. All right, so now we're ready to finish the proof. It's not that difficult. So here we go. First of all, this continuum Z is a subset of this quadratic Kramer-Julia set, so it's a tree-like continuum, particularly non-separating. And we have this map F that maps Z onto itself. It's not known in general whether that implies that there's a fixed point in this continuum. However, we know here a little bit more. We know that the map F is holomorphic. So in particular, it's positively oriented. And it's a result of Harold Bell, who announced this sometime in the 80s, that there exists a fixed point. So that would be, if you're thinking back about Julia's set, it would be one of the periodic points of the original Julia set. No, though the way to think of it here maybe is one-dimensional non-separating. So that would be equivalent. Another would be an inverse limit on trees. Or so both of those would be equivalent statements in the plane. So the important thing is, it's not known whether every non-separating plane continuum has the fixed point property. Not even for tree-like non-separating plane continuum, that is known. But it is known that if you take a nice map of that continuum, particularly a holomorphic map, or in fact what you need is a positively oriented map, which the holomorphic maps are, then you do have a fixed point. So we need this fixed point. You don't need the holomorph. This is true for all positively oriented maps.
What does it mean to be positively
oriented? A circle in its image winds in the positive direction. So positive winding number of simple closed curves when you map forward. It has nothing to do with continuum. Could be as bad as you like. Whenever you have a mapping that has the fact that every simple closed curve in its image winds in the positive direction, then that's a positively oriented map. And in general, it's true then. If you have a non-invariant, if you have an invariant non-separating plane continuum, then there is a fixed point in that continuum. That's always true. In fact, all these maps are compositions of open and monotone maps. So in a positive oriented, they are relatively nice. That's all you need. You just need to be defined in a neighborhood. So if you have a Z and you have a positive oriented map defined on a neighborhood, then you will have a fixed point in that continuum. That's all you need. Okay. So we have this fixed point, and now we're going to do something that we always do in dynamics as well. We have, right this way, the map at infinity. Here's our Riemann map V to the complement of Z. Here's our map F, which is 1-to-1 on the neighborhood of Z. Here we have C again. Here we have the disk at infinity. And the first thing we notice, of course, we can just come around this diagram. Everything is 1-to-1. So we get an induced map here, map G, right? Just coming around the diagram. And that map will be defined on an annular neighborhood of the boundary of this disk at infinity. So since this map is defined on an annular neighborhood and all these maps are nice, it's not difficult to see that this map extends over the boundary of the infinity. So G extends. So let's call this restriction of G to this boundary, capital G. That's now a map from the circle to itself. And that map will be itself a homeomorphism. Everything is 1-to-1 here. So we get the effect of homeomorphism of the circle in this case. The induced map is homeomorphism. Now we need one more thing. We had a fixed point here in our tree-like continuum. We're in the Julia set. So there is a conformal external rate of the Julia set that lands at this point, which we may assume is fixed by taking a power of the map. That conformal external rate to the Julia set is just a ray in the complement of Z. There is a ray in the complement of Z that lands at Z that is fixed under the map. If we pull that ray up upstairs, we get upstairs a ray that lands at a point of the unit circle that is fixed. Right, every ray here pulls back to a ray upstairs. So in other words, if you have a fixed ray under this map, little g, then its landing point is fixed. So this g has a fixed point. So this came out of the fact that it was a ray landing at this point z that was fixed under the map. So now we have a homeomorphism of the circle that has a fixed point. Now it's not difficult to see that the dimension of the fixed point set of this G is zero. There are no fixed intervals under this map. So we have a homeomorphism of the zero of the unit circle with a non-empty zero-dimensional set of fixed points. So that means that there exists a fixed point which attracts from at least one side. And that's the fixed point we want to look at. So let's look at a schematic picture here. Here we have a piece of the circle. Here we have our fixed point. And say on this side, it's attracting. So now let's take a defining sequence of crosscuts of this prime end here. C sub ends. And we're choosing them such that when we push forward under C, we get a defining sequence of crosscuts of our continuum. Meaning their diameter go to zero as well. So we choose them smartly, if you like, in the domain. And now let's see what happens. We know that these endpoints of these crosscuts move in because it's attracting from one side. Right? So what is that going to tell us? That tells us that if we look at the G image of this crosscut CN, then they have to, in fact, intersect themselves. That's not empty. Because if they were empty, then this crosscut stays inside. So if not, then the shadow of G of Cn would be contained in the shadow of Cn. And now if we push the picture forward, we get here crosscuts pushing inside themselves. So we would have a disk mapping inside itself, and we can't have that. So that would be a contradiction if you push forward. Now, since these crosscuts now have to intersect each other all the time, when we push forward, the image crosscuts intersect. So we have, now, so if we take without loss of generality, if we take the limit of these image crosscuts, then that's the point Z. And since we have that F of Cn intersected with Zn is not empty all the time, we have that Z is a fixed point. And we have for this fixed point now the property, if you think about coming back, this is true for every defining sequence of crosscuts. For this point Z, we have the property whenever you take a defining sequence of crosscuts that converges to C, then they have to, the crosscut and its image have to meet. We actually have this condition that we had over here, right? So this is true for all sequences of crosscuts. But that contradicts the corollary we had over here, because here we said whenever we have a repelling fixed point that we have over there, then there always exists a defining sequence of crosscuts that moves off itself, which contradicts the situation we have over here. Whenever we push these things back over here, we argue that they have to intersect themselves. So that is a contradiction. And I guess that kind of uses up my